Hi guys, I am back here today, or just there. I'm back in Sydney where I was a few weeks ago. I decided this time I'd do the Opera House because I did the Harbour Bridge last time. You can see the Harbour Bridge just there. It is an absolutely awesome morning here today. It's, where are we now? May 21, April 21. So we're still not quite winter, but it is in sight and it's awesome. You know, I'm sitting here in a t-shirt. So yeah, this is just such a good spot to be here in Oz. For those of you that are from other parts of the world as well, Sydney is about an hour and a bit flight away from my home. I've got to go north to the sunny a bit later today. But I've been down here in Sydney since yesterday morning for the NDC Agenda Committee meeting. So you might have seen me appearing in NDC events around the world. This is originally the Norwegian Developer Conference, which I go to every year in Oslo and in London, as well as in Sydney. We had the first one here last year, and we've been here up till late planning the agenda for this year in Sydney, which is actually a really mammoth job. If you've never been involved in organizing a conference before, just sort of going through the number of speakers we have and trying to sort of pick a combination of good people, good topics, reliable people that will bring in an audience, trying to get diversity across different sort of views and genders and everything else as well. It's a real, quite a real task, but we culled back a list of, I think, 730 odd talks down to about 130. So that gives you a bit of an idea of the scope. And it's not an easy task. And there's a bunch of really, really good stuff you've got to cut in order to get back to the numbers that we actually have available space for. So anyway, I'll be talking more about NDC as we get closer to the event. I've got to go and do the one in Oslo yet, so we're a little bit further out. And then in Sydney, I'll be back here in August. So a few things have happened this week. I did a bunch of blogging, actually. But before I sort of get into the blogging, one of the things that happened that I'm really, really happy about is that latest Pluralsight course on what every developer must know about HTTPS has gone nuts. It's going right to the top of the charts of Pluralsight. There's a list of the top 100 courses out of nearly 6,000, and they have like this 10-day rolling average, right? Like, you know, over the last 10 days, which have rated the highest. And I've got about 7 days worth of that at the moment because the course only went live a week. And it was up to the low 20s, which I was really happy about. So if I can make the top 10 again, that will be awesome. It is the first course I've ever done that has rated 5 out of 5 stars. Now, I've done 30 courses over, what are we at now, nearly 5 years. So to actually get a 5.0 out of 5, I am enormously stoked about. There's a lot of 4.x's in there and some very good 4.x's, but never a 5. So I'm very happy about that. I'm going to put a link to it again in the notes because it is something that, regardless of what I do with Pluralsight, is really important for all developers to know how to do your HTTPS things properly. So that is that. Now, let me get into the list. I've got my iPad down here. Incidentally, normally when I do this, I'm at home, I've got my PC just behind the phone and I can sort of read stuff on the PC and it looks like I'm looking at you. But this time, I've got the iPad. So a few things this week. Number one, I wrote about metadata and VPNs and law of unintended consequences. And the context here is that in Australia, as with other parts in the world, the government has decided that they want to retain metadata about your browsing history. Now, the first problem we've got here is actually defining what metadata is. And I've already said something which will upset some Australians, and I'll come back and explain why. But metadata means many things to many people, and one of the problems we've got is that even our politicians struggle to understand it. And I put a link to a video embedded, a YouTube video, in the blog post with our Attorney General trying to explain metadata very, very, very badly, just as a term. And this is part of the problem. People aren't exactly sure what it is. The reason I wrote about it during the week is that late last week, was the deadline by which the mandatory metadata retention laws became mandatory, i.e. all the ISPs in Australia have to store this data. Now, Australia is part of the story because the broader picture is we've got similar things happening all over the world where governments, such as the UK government with their Investigatory Powers Act, which we also know as the Snoopers Charter, they have to store a bunch of your data. Now, by all accounts, what's stored in the UK is much more invasive than what is stored in Australia. And a bunch of Aussies popped up and told me that, look, I got the post fundamentally wrong, because in Australia, apparently what's being stored is connection data. And there's a few examples which are kind of contradictory, but they're along the lines of, when you connect to the internet, you will have data stored about when you connect, how long you connect for, how much data is transferred, and obviously what your identity is. And the sort of contradictory bits is, one of the resources people most frequently pointed me at is, I said, here's a life hacker story from 2015 that says everything you know about metadata is wrong. So life hacker says this is all that's stored, you know, the connection info, you know, not the IP you're going to, not the host name, nothing like that. Last week, I think it must have been around Friday and then again on the weekend, Lifehacker posted two articles about how to avoid mandatory metadata retention laws by using a VPN. And I'm sort of going to people, you're pointing me to Lifehacker, saying Lifehacker's explaining it clearly now, and at the same token saying that you need a VPN, which wouldn't circumvent the connection data that the ISP is storing if they're simply storing when do you connect and how much data do you send. By the same token, if that's all the ISP is storing, no, there's not much of a sort of personal invasive nature, but also there's not much of any real good to the government as well. If all you're storing is when someone connected to the internet, when they disconnected, that alone is not real good. What they need is they need something on a corresponding end to indicate that that IP address that was connected to that IP at that time was browsing a website about how to blow shit up, or whatever it is that these guys do that the government wants to try and catch. And of course, if that's the concern, if the concern is that you're going to have an IP address from someone browsing on a website, we need to be able to tie it back to an individual at the ISP, that's exactly the sort of thing a VPN stops, right? Because a VPN will give you a different outwardly facing IP address to the one that your IP assigns you. So when folks said, look, you've got this sort of fundamentally wrong, I went, well, let's sort of come back to the whole point of the post. The point of the post was that the law of unintended consequences is that by implementing a metadata retention law in Australia, the UK, anywhere else, you're actually forcing a lot of people to go towards VPNs. And even the image I used at the top of the post was about all the news articles about telling people how to get VPNs. When people start getting VPNs, they make it a lot harder for anyone to intercept your traffic. And the people that do want to blow the shit up, they know very well how to go and get a VPN, because there's so much damn material out there about it now. So the unintended consequence is that there's more access to encrypted communications for everyone than what there ever was before. However, normal everyday folks browsing at home are probably not going to use them, because VPNs have a bunch of other issues as well, such as increased latency, often blocked by the likes of Netflix. You try and make a purchase and they say, hey, this looks like a dodgy IP, so on and so forth. So the whole thing's a bit of a mess now. It's not really protecting anyone, because those who do want to send malicious things over the internet or browse nasty sites know damn well how to protect their browsing history. It's just a mess. So let's not go into that anymore. I'll link to it. There is some interesting comments there. There are some interesting conspiracy theories there, which may even be true. Who knows? Anyway, I'll link through to that. So that was that. Metadata. Now, the next one, StartCom. I, in the past, have been enthusiastic about StartCom certificates. So StartCom would issue certificates that you could get for free if you were, say, a non-profit. And I was using them on various projects that I was doing. I used one on a project of mine called A Safer Web, which was the automated security analyzer for ASP.NET websites. The project that's gone unloved since Have I Been Pwned has taken off. So anyway, I've had this certificate, this StartCom certificate on A Safer Web. And someone pinged me on Twitter the other day and they went, hey, your HTTPS is broken. Now, first of all, I don't want my HTTPS to be broken. I just wrote a course about how not to have your HTTPS broken. So that wouldn't be a good look. So there's that. But what I normally do when someone sends me a message like that is I go, okay, I'll go over to SSL Labs, which incidentally is there to test your TLS, but we say SSL because reasons, history. So I go over to SSL Labs. And I run the test, and then I just send them a link and they go, look, it says everything's okay. You've probably got an outdated browser that doesn't support TLS or something really weird and funky like that. When I run the report for A Safer Web on SSL Labs, it comes back and says, your grade is about to be capped to a T. Now, if you've not used SSL Labs before, you can put in the host name of any website running over SSL, HTTPS, and it will go into a bunch of tests. It will see what Cypher suites it supports, what protocols, all the rest of it, protocol versions. And it comes back, gives you a grade. You know, do you get like an A plus or a B or an F or whatever it may be? And I was getting a T on a Safer Web. It actually, I'll rephrase that. I was getting an A plus, but it said as of about, I think, the 18th of May, a few weeks away, you will be capped a T because you got a StartCom certificate. And StartCom was acquired by WoSign a little while back, a Chinese CA who was doing some very dodgy things with the way they issued certificates. Mozilla absolutely went to town on them, ripped them a new one in terms of saying, here's all the dodgy stuff you're doing, said, we're going to distrust you guys. And we're going to sort of do this in waves. And what's ultimately happened is a combination of WoSign and StartCom are being distrusted by browsers in different ways. So for example, keeping in mind, I'm not reading my notes here, Chrome 56 started to distrust StartCom certificates some time ago. Later versions, and let's actually clarify that, Chrome 56 would distrust StartCom certificates issued after, I think, about October 20. I'm going to link to the stories here so you can get all the right facts. So they were going to sort of start distrusting those. And then what they said is, in later versions of Chrome, we are going to ultimately distrust all the StartCom certificates, even the older ones. Now, I had reissued a StartCom certificate for a safer web just before everything blew up with this ridiculous sort of issuing of crazy certificates from WoSign. So I was sort of before the October cutoff. And what they were saying there is that a later version of Chrome, and I think the guy that reported this was on 58, which I think is meant to hit next month, when that launches, your site's going to be distrusted, stuff's going to break, and it's going to look like the image he tweeted me, which shows the site not working and a big security warning. So this was the problem, and I didn't want my site to break. So of course, I've spoken a lot about using Cloudflare before. I jumped over to Cloudflare, added the site, went to my DNS settings, changed my name servers. It was job done. The whole thing was much, much faster than actually writing the blog post about getting off StartCom. And then I went and issued a Cloudflare Origin certificate, which you can then put on your actual Origin website so I could get the StartCom one off altogether. That's Cloudflare Origin one is free. So basically I moved the whole thing over for free within a few minutes, and I get Cloudflare doing things like caching of content and blocking certain amounts of malicious traffic. So have a read of that post, particularly if you have anything of any StartCom nature. You really want to get on top of that because stuff's going to break. And someone tweeted me a link, I'll see if I can find it and put it in the show notes, about a search for StartCom certificates, which showed something like 1.5 million active StartCom certificates still out there. So a bunch of websites are going to start breaking pretty soon. All right, so that was those guys, StartCom. Now, something new, it's kind of new, another Pluralsight course. When I was in London doing the NDC conference in January, I recorded a couple of different play-by-plays. Now, one of them has already gone out, the play-by-play I did with Lars Klint on branding and personal sort of profile and all that sort of thing. The other one that I recorded at that time, I recorded with a mate of mine called Aaron Powell, another Aussie, just coincidentally, the Aussie that introduced me to Pluralsight in the first place. We recorded one on Azure Beyond Websites. And what we wanted to do with this course was to show that there is a bunch of stuff you can do with Azure that goes well and truly beyond the old paradigm of, I'm just going to put some files on a web server and it's job done. So we do stuff like, we are sitting there in the IDE in Visual Studio, spinning up Azure resources from there, pushing websites out, using table storage, using queue storage, lots of code in there showing how that works. We spend a bunch of time in the portal provisioning resources, we use web jobs, we use functions, and then we tie it all together so one thing triggers off another thing and then triggers off another thing, and it's like just cloudy magic everywhere. And it's kind of like if I was just going to sit down and do an end-to-end demo to show what are the sorts of things you can do with cloud and Azure and platform as a service today, that is the stuff that I would do. So that course went out just in the last couple of days. I pushed out the blog post explaining what it is and what we're doing just last night. Also explain a little bit of context too, where I started doing a lot of Azure stuff about 4 or 5 years ago. And one of the biggest challenges I had was explaining to people in my old corporate role why Azure and why platform as a service makes sense. And you know, part of this is Azure as a product does some cool stuff. Part of this as well is that as a pattern, moving away from managing your own servers is a really, really good thing. And yeah, I didn't want to have just IaaS in the cloud and suddenly you're still a server admin, you just don't have physical access to the boxes. I wanted to use things where the provider manages it all end to end, which is what this is. So I hope people like that course. It is very, very demo-centric, especially for a play-by-play. Lots of walkthroughs, lots of code. Pluralsight fortunately did a lot of editing because we retook a bunch of stuff just to try and make it all as slick as possible. So that's there. That is the Pluralsight course on Azure Beyond websites. I'll link to that one too. Last couple of things. I loaded a data breach into Have I Been Pwned yesterday called Fashion Fantasy Game. Now, this isn't really my demographic of website, but apparently it's like an online game that's in the fashion industry. I didn't know this, that you could make an online game just related to fashion. And here's the really interesting thing about this and why I sort of thought it's noteworthy to talk about here. Someone sent me this data, 2.3 million records, email addresses, passwords stored as MD5 hashes with no salt, so basically useless. And they sent me this data, and I start looking around to try and figure out if anyone knows about this. And I find all of these references online in data breach trading circles on the clear web, on publicly facing websites, about Fashion Fantasy Game having been hacked. You know, I'm finding references to the same file name, to the same 2.3 million people. And I end up putting out a tweet and said, hey, there's all these references. Do they know about it? Like, just because a whole bunch of people are trading data that's tagged Fashion Fantasy Game, does Fashion Fantasy Game actually know they got hacked? And the only conclusion I could reach is that they didn't know, right? Because there was certainly no one popped up and said, yeah, look, we got a notification. No Google searches showed up results of them disclosing a breach. So frankly, I didn't want to load the data in until they actually know about the incident, or at least until there's been some due diligence to try and get in touch with them. So I pinged a reporter and we worked on this story together. They tried to get in touch with Fashion Fantasy Game. The usual story that happens so many times, no response as of yet. So they ran the story, I've run the data, and Have I Been Pwned? The thing again that kind of strikes me with this is how so many different people can know about this data breach, and it is legit too, I've verified it by my usual ways. So many people know about this, but the company doesn't. And this data's floating around, and it's MD5 hashes, so the passwords are useless, so people are cracking them and using them to break into other accounts. And the company doesn't know about it. And because they don't know about it, they haven't told anyone. We assume they don't know about it because they haven't told anyone. If they know about it and they haven't told anyone, they got a different set of problems. So that was Fashion Fantasy Game. I think that sort of scenario is just reflective of what goes on a lot of the time in this industry. Last thing, I've got Gold Security sponsoring me this week. I had Gold Security on some number of weeks ago. They're back again. They do a bunch of AppSec-y things, which are well worth checking out if that is something that you are interested in. And they're going to be around quite a bit actually over the rest of the year. I mentioned last week that I've managed to fill a few more slots and fill them quite a way forward actually towards the end of the year, all the way through to December for some of these. So Gold's going to be there. I appreciate their support. It's good having them on board. So please check out them and show your thanks for what they do to help me do what I do. That's it. I'm done in Sydney today. I'm going to go and have a nice walk before I have to go back and keep planning this NDC agenda. And then I'll be back home next week and for the next 2 or 3 weeks after that before I end up in Europe again. Thanks very much for watching.